Hey folks, my name is Matt Major from Growth Mode Content, and I am very excited to be able to guest host the first episode of The Details in the Deal with Christine O'Connell Moore. That is the lovely young lady who's sitting right next to me, and we're going to introduce her in just a minute. But I just want to say that we're very excited to make this podcast. This is the first one that we're doing that's even remotely around kind of real estate and investing. And of course, I'm giving away a little bit of what we're going to talk about and what you do. But I'm very excited about this, and I'm very excited for folks to learn some incredible stories that you've already began to share with us about your history and experience and why you're so good at what you do. So
thank you.
Without further ado, Christine, please go ahead and introduce yourself and just give us the basic hello.
Thank you, Matt. I really appreciate being here. It's exciting and to participate in this. So my company is O'Connell Moore Consulting and Real Estate. I've pretty much been in real estate, as I like to say, since birth. My family owned real estate as I was growing up, and I kind of got the bug. Went to my first real estate closing when I was 13, that was really quite something. I still remember it very clearly.
Wow!
So I've come from a family business background, and I've done business acquisitions as well as commercial real estate brokerage. So I'd like to combine the two, and often my clients do both.
Sure.
Syracuse native, lived here my whole life.
Wow.
And go Orange, go SU.
That's great. So I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because that's one of the things in terms of what you do, the fact that you do this business sales, basically, as well as the commercial property sales, because like you said, it seems like a no-brainer that those two pieces go hand in hand. And I can imagine a lot of businesses for sale have those property assets that go with them, right?
Yes. And sometimes they sell the assets. Sometimes they lease them to the company that's buying their company. Or a combination.
Wow. So let's, before we really get into it, I'm very excited to learn about so many of these different things. This is a world that I want to get more and more into in terms of buying properties and businesses, to be quite honest. So I'm excited about that. But I gotta chill out for a second and let's back up, and I want to learn more about Christine. So,
okay.
You know, you told us that you've had this interest in real estate since you were a kid. How'd you begin? What was your first sort of professional steps to get here?
Well, in the beginning, I come from a small family business, and we did everything. You know, we cleaned apartments, we answered the phone,
wow.
we rented apartments. We owned a couple of hotels, and I worked behind the front desk, went to Cornell for some hotel classes down there, which was a great experience.
Oh, wow.
Attended college at Syracuse University. And then I really didn't know what I wanted to do when I got done with college. And my dad said, well, just come work in the company and we'll figure it out.
Yeah.
Right. And I got further bit by the bug. And I think most kids don't want to join the family business when they're 16 or 18. But, you know, when you get into your 20s and you're looking at serious life.
Sure.
That's when I started to
say,
this makes sense. Not a bad option. And my family owned some service businesses that we bought and sold. And I was a big part of the growth part of those businesses, which was very exciting. And in that, I learned what it was like to be on both the buy and the sell side of both real estate as well as business brokerage.
That's got to give you a huge advantage, right? That buyer's side of the perspective of the equation when you go to list a place or sell it.
Absolutely. I think what I bring to my customers, to my clients, is empathy, because
yeah.
I understand both sides of it. I always tell my clients, especially those selling their businesses, real estate's a little less personal typically, but when it's your business, I always say the hardest decision that you make is to decide it's okay to sell your business. After that, it's numbers. It's the cost. It's finding the right company, logistics. But you have to give yourself permission to do it, and sometimes that takes a long time.
Yeah, I can imagine. So what was your, you know, as you're going through, you told me, you know, you caught the bug, and it sounds like there's different aspects that you really liked. What was it specifically that really hooked you? What, you know, what part of it? And I'm sure there's some parts, and I'll ask you about that you don't like in the industry, as with any business. But
sure.
What was it specifically that really, like, I like doing this?
I like transactions.
Okay.
I like to start a deal and end a deal. And you know, as the title of our podcast is, you know, the details are in the deal.
Right.
I like to continue to work with people, and generally 40 to 50% of what I'll call my new accounts, which would be new transactions, are from clients that I've worked with in the past. which is such a compliment.
Yes.
And that is that part I really love. And now I'm working with children and grandchildren of the people that I was working with 30 years ago.
That's incredible. Those relationships are so neat. And I got to imagine in kind of a commercial as opposed to a residential primarily venture, you have a lot more opportunity for that repeat business, right?
Yes. Yes, because people who buy homes, sometimes when they sell their homes, they move to another area, which sure. you might not be servicing, or it's just not as large of a transaction typically. But I'm really proud of the retention that I've had with my clients, and it's really great to see their families grow, and they see my families grow, and it's a real fun part of the business.
Yeah, that's so neat. I've got a background in technology, obviously, but. I guess I would say my hobby, the thing that I find really interesting, what I do for fun actually is browse commercial real estate listings. And part of the reason for that is I love looking at especially these older, big, weird properties and thinking, you know, what could you do with this?
Right.
What new thing could breathe life into this old building? And so it's very interesting to me. Have somebody who does that all day long.
Yes.
A little jealous.
Deals, I'm sorry. one of the deals that I'm working on right now is an old factory building just outside of downtown Syracuse.
Oh, wow.
And it's being purchased by a company that will convert it into apartments. And it's been a machine factory for over 100 years.
Wow.
So it's very cool. And I can't wait to see what they do with the building.
I absolutely love that, especially if they retain some of that, you know, downtown buildings that have yes. so much of the brick. And some of these apartments are just... I'm jealous of those too. I don't know. Young people have so many great options that didn't exist if you want to live downtown and things like that. And it's so cool to see.
Yes. I had lunch today with a gentleman, and he said when he wakes up in the morning, he looks at AXA Tower, and he can see the temperature outside.
Yeah.
And because it's on the top of the towers.
Yeah.
And then he can see the weather, and then he looks to the north, and he sees the Penfield building, which for those who don't know is a building that's recently been converted into affordable housing. It's got a little house on top
yeah.
of it. It's one of the coolest buildings in Syracuse, and that's what he sees those two buildings immediately in the morning.
What a great view!
Fabulous view. Yes, and he loves it.
So. Slightly off topic, but I got to ask because you mentioned it. On top of the AXA Towers, of course, there's the weather. And then there's that star.
Yes.
That used to be known as, I believe, the weather star, right? Do you
yes.
know, is that still actively kept up?
No, I don't know. I haven't noticed that it's actively kept up. What I remember is that the stars were talked about the weather. If there were a certain number of stars, it was going to snow or rain or the barometer. And, you know, there was a kind of a code to them.
Yeah.
But I remember that as a kid. And as you drove toward downtown from wherever you were, you could see it.
Yeah.
Yes.
That was something years ago, I had an office in the AXA Towers, and we got to become friendly with the manager of it. And I'm not from Syracuse, so it was kind of a unique thing. And they said, yeah, there's actually a color code, and the guy had the chart. Mm-hmm. And it's supposed to, whatever color the star is or whatever, is giving you the forecast. It's
right.
going to snow, it's going to be sunny, whatever. And that guy in particular, and this is well over a decade ago, made it was his job, and he made it a point. He kept up with it with the weather, but I've always been curious in years since. Such a neat thing. I feel like people should keep it up, you know?
I think it's mostly just the temperature now.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's only. Am I going to freeze or am I not, you know? 85 or 32 in central New York.
Sometimes we have all the weather.
Yes.
Yes.
That's very true. Very true. So as we get into, you know, talking about your story and how you came into this business, tell me about, it doesn't necessarily have to be the largest, but the first really memorable deal as you got into this on your own.
What a great question. I would say I sold two apartment complexes in the Elbridge, I'm in Jordan areas.
Okay.
That was really what made me think that I wanted to get my broker's license and,
oh, wow.
and do this on a more than a casual basis.
Okay.
And that was great fun. I had a mentor who helped me with that and, you know, let me put my license with him until I could become a broker. We'll always appreciate that. And I love finding the customer who wants to, the client who wants to buy the building. That's very exciting for me. And usually they're excited too. They're
sure.
growing, and it's great to work with the buyers that want to grow because obviously that's where more of your business comes
yeah.
from.
That's awesome. Tell me a little bit about, for the people that don't understand myself, what the difference is, because you hear these terms about the broker and folks that are real estate agents maybe, but not a broker. What is the difference? What is that all about?
Sure. So a broker is like, both brokers and agents are licensed by New York State, the Department of State. And they, so an agent would be someone who works under a broker's tutelage. And there's a lot of rules about it, but basically sure. you have to work for a broker for 1 year before you can apply for your broker's license. And you have to have a certain number of transactions. So and then the broker is the person who's really responsible for all of their agents. And, you know, for their making sure that they conform to fair housing laws. There's mm-hmm. a lot of things that are really important in both commercial and residential real
estate. Gotcha.
So you know, most people start out as an agent, and then if they want to, they can become an associate broker who still works under the broker, but they have more responsibilities.
I see.
Or a broker.
Okay. And, you know, for you to do that, what's the advantage? If somebody's thinking, I want to do this as my career, what's the advantage? Or is that the goal of everyone, that they would move up to be a broker?
I don't think it's the goal of everyone, because not everybody wants the responsibility.
I see.
And you do have liability responsibilities and managerial.
Uh-huh.
You know, if you send someone out to show a property and they don't follow the laws,
sure.
You know, it's the broker who's going to really get in trouble
I
for
see.
That. The most trouble.
Yeah.
So not everybody wants to take on that responsibility.
That's fair.
And agents, if they're new to the business, need to be mentored and need to have someone show them the ropes. There's the expense of the office and, you know, phone systems and IT and all the things that a
sure.
broker would provide. There may be some paybacks for that, or maybe something that comes out of their commissions. But there's a lot to setting up a brokerage agency.
I see. And you see all over the place these sort of national brands for real estate. And typically, you know, I'm thinking probably in the residential world. But are there, you know, a Remax, whatever, in the commercial world? And if so, how does that work with this hierarchy of agents and brokers and all these things?
Certainly. So all the agents are self-employed.
I see.
They're under the license of the broker, but they're self-employed. So you have national companies. We have national companies in the Central New York area, but everyone who works for them basically does the same thing that I do.
Gotcha.
You know, in different ways. And then you have to try to find a way to differentiate yourself.
Gotcha. That's, I just found that kind of interesting. You know, that's one of those models that's not quite a franchise, but also has this national element to it. And always just interesting how that plays out.
Sure.
So we talked about a building. I want to pivot just for a moment to the actual business side. What was one of the first business sales that you transacted, and what was interesting about that?
So outside of businesses that I transacted for my family, I sold one business 3 different times.
Oh,
first
wow.
time, business owner called me, and she was very frustrated. She was frustrated with her business. She was frustrated with her employees. She was somebody who really needed to get out of her business. And she called me and she said, "I'm closing my doors. We're closing our doors Friday." I said, "Wait a minute. You've been in business 10 plus years. You have a fabulous reputation. You have assets.
Sure.
You have something worth selling." So I said, just take a breath. Let me come and see you. I met with her. We looked at what she had. We sold the company. And what I was able to do for her is to cover her debts. She got out clean. She got out with the company intact. We sold the name of the company to someone else. And she was happy. You know, her
sure.
goals were reached. She didn't just close the door after
right.
all of that hard work. She now owns her own business, and it's just her, and she's really happy. And I went on to help sell the business 2 more times.
Oh, wow.
So it was it's a service business, and I love service businesses. That's my background.
Okay. Yeah. If somebody, let's talk about this from a couple different sides, because I really think this is quite interesting. Let's start from the buyer side. I am an investor. I've come to Syracuse. I've heard that Micron's coming to town, and this is a great place to set up shop and put down roots. But I don't really have a preference in what way to go. So I come to you, and I say, "Hey, give me a business, Christine. What do you got? You know,
sure.
How does that work?"
I would ask them a lot of questions. What are your interests? What are your passions? Owning a business is not an easy thing, as you know.
Sure.
I would ideally want to put them with something that they really love and want to
sure.
get up in the morning to go to and want to work with everybody and, you know, have the risks and the rewards that you have with owning a business. Obviously, the financial part of it is important. You have to know how much money they have to invest and how creditworthy they are. And those yeah. are tricky questions and discussions
sure.
sometimes, but they're important. Because you don't want to waste anybody's time.
Right.
Right. And we would look at geographic areas that they're interested in. Do they want a small business? Do they want a larger business? Do they want to start a business? You know, and that's always an option too.
Yep.
So there's a lot of questions, and the more I can get to know somebody, the better that I can direct them. And if I don't have something in my portfolio that they're interested in, I can reach out to my network and find them something.
So it's almost like, again, going back to real estate, where there's all these different folks selling them, but you can show me any of the properties. There's a similar sort of network of businesses for sale that way that you could introduce people.
It's fair to say businesses are more difficult to identify, though, because typically people don't want it on the street that they're for sale.
Yeah.
Now, you can put a sign in front of most real estate, and it's pretty public, and there's a lot of websites that you can market them on, plus your own network, of course.
Sure.
But with businesses, confidentiality is huge.
Yeah.
And they don't want to alienate their employees. They don't want to alienate their customers and clients. And they might not even be quite sure that they want to sell themselves. So if I can bring them a vetted buyer who is extremely interested, people that are on the fence about selling may say, okay, yes, this is the right time.
Gives them something legitimate to actually consider rather than just all these hypotheticals.
I like to say to both my real estate and my business clients that I'm just not looking for a listing.
Yeah.
I don't want to just get it and put it as part of my portfolio and say I have it and have someone else sell it. I'm going to work it. And it's important that people trust that process.
So you started to answer kind of the other side of that that I wanted to get into in terms of the business piece, which is selling the business, right?
Yes.
And you described that a little bit, but I'd love to hear a little bit more because this is something we talked about a little bit previously, and it makes a ton of sense, right? That confidentiality piece. If you are in business and you're thinking about selling, that might not project well even to your clients. Like, right. Oh, these guys are trying to bail. And that very well may not be the case, but how do you navigate that? You know, what, you know, if somebody comes to you and says, hey, sell this thing, but don't tell anybody.
Right.
How do you do it?
It's not easy.
Yeah.
That is exactly what happens. I want to sell my business and sometimes it even happens with properties, but don't tell anybody about
it.
So what I do is I vet people anonymously. So I'll say I'll have a business and maybe I can provide a category.
I see.
And sometimes I can't even, depending upon how many of those are in a certain area.
Only one in town.
Right.
So,
you don't want to identify a company prematurely.
Sure.
But I will work with them. We'll talk about what needs to be done to get the business in order. Mm-hmm. So often with businesses, there's a lot of expenses that flow through that the next owner might not have. They might have 12 children's cars in their health insurance for their aunt. Or, you know, there's a lot of things that happen in small businesses that people do because they own a small business.
Right.
Right. So we would do what we call add backs, which is take all of those expenses out of the income statements from the business and really show what the true bottom line is. We may also have to add something. We may also have to put some things back in. For example, if you're the key person, if you're the seller and you're the key person, we may have to put a payroll in for somebody to be replaced.
To stay on.
Right. Or pay them to stay on or as a consulting possibly for, for a little bit of time. And then work through the logistics of the business, put together a business plan just that I can show to a buyer when they're comfortable with me doing so. I typically say to my sellers, I will not show this business to anyone that you do not know that I'm showing it to, because I might not even know that somebody's a competitor.
Sure.
You know, there's lots of things that you need to find out. Or they might not like the person, or it might be their next door neighbor. I mean, there's you know, that's why the confidentiality is so important.
Wow.
And it takes a while.
I can imagine.
Yeah, it takes a while. And again, it goes back to, are you really comfortable doing this?
Right.
Yes.
I think that's just so incredibly interesting how those things come to be. Do you have kind of a list of go-to investors in terms of purchasing businesses? Or is it, you know, as folks come about, like, how does that go?
I do have a list of people who I know would buy something if it was interesting.
Sure.
But typically, if it's a business in a certain industry, in certain industries, I will then seek out that industry. And you know, the most natural buyer for somebody is somebody who's already, for a business, is someone who's already in that business. And it'll be worth more because it'll be a strategic alignment.
Sure. Okay. When you look at businesses, you know, you always hear these things. You watch Shark Tank and you hear about the valuations and things like that. And I know if you learn a little bit more about business, it's, you know, there's different multiples, right, based on your industry and different things. Typically, though, what I've seen is that's mostly just based on revenue, right?
Yes.
Is that all that a business sale is really based on at the end of the day is the numbers, or are there some sort of additional value you might assign to their brand value or things like that? Like, how does that work out?
You definitely, there's a value to brands. I think another thing that gets missed sometimes is assets. Like the lady who called me and said, I just want to close my doors.
Sure.
Right. She had assets and they were worth something. And that's primarily what we sold for her business.
I see.
That was tangible. It's what banks like too. And that, you know, one of the things you have to look at is it financeable? Most people are not going to come in and just pay cash for the whole thing.
I gotcha.
So you have to be able to explain it to a bank, and real estate's much more easy for a bank to understand than a business is.
Sure.
So that's all why it's important to have a package and to have your ducks in a row. It's usually not a good idea to just sell your business because you decided it was Friday afternoon and you want to sell your business. If you can prepare even 1, 2, 3 years in advance, work with someone like me who knows what a buyer will be looking for, you can almost always get more money for your business.
Okay, that's great to know.
You're not desperate.
Yeah. Yeah. I would almost say it's not exactly like when I think about selling a house, right?
Right.
You know, we decided we'll put it on the market, and ideally, month later, you're on your way. But
right. But maybe for $10,000 more in investment in your house, you could get $50,000.
Yeah.
Right. Just the curb appeal.
Sure. Sure. I love that. If you were to, and I'm going to put you on the spot a little bit.
Sure.
If you were to take that, say somebody wants to sell the business, they know that today, but they're not in a real rush and they want to take your advice. All right, I'll take 2 years. What are the best things they can do over those 2 years to get ready?
One would be to have either a natural successor within your company that could be almost a turnkey for a buyer, or to wean yourself away as much as you can. And that's not an easy thing to do.
No, it's not.
But you know, if you're not going to stay with the business, you need to figure your buyer as well as yourself need to figure out how this business is going to run without you.
That makes a lot of sense.
And I think the other thing is you know, clean things up, clean up your balance sheet, clean up your bottom line. Clean up your warehouse.
Sure.
You know, just make things look as nice as you can possibly make them. If you have key employees, perhaps they'll have contracts that can be taken over by a buyer.
Yeah.
New York State, that's a little tricky sometimes. But you know, if you can provide a group of excellent key people, that's going to be very attractive to a buyer. And again, I think just the big thing is just to make it as attractive as possible, physically and financially.
I see. Okay. You guys let her in the warehouse, didn't you?
We don't judge.
No, I think that's great. Incredible information, honestly.
I
love hearing about this and learning how these processes work. Because like you said, you either know nothing about it or you get bits and pieces from TV shows and things like that. So learning how that actually works, it's incredible. That's why we're doing this.
And pricing is really important. You see on Shark Tank the valuations, and they're ridiculous, and they will tell you they're ridiculous. And so you don't want to overprice your company because it won't sell, and then they'll get stale on the shelf, and that's not good for anybody.
Right. What it sounds like we're talking about mostly, you know, very well established businesses. Do you have any advice, or do you even get into a startup? You know, as we're talking about Shark Tank, a lot of that is so much early, you know, things. What are your thoughts on that sort of situation?
I like startups. I've been a mentor for Start Fast Venture Group.
Oh, wow.
And loved working with they were young people.
Yeah.
You know, starting their businesses. I like doing that. You know, I'm in business, so you have to be able to afford the services that I'm providing. And sometimes that's a little tricky when you're first starting out. I've been known to take some stock in exchange for some services.
Gotcha.
One of the things that I found with startup companies is they always want to make it perfect before they move out into the world. And eventually you have to prove you can have sales. And so that's the part. Technology is not my background.
Sure.
My husband's a technologist.
Gotcha.
So we make a good pair. We often pair together on that. But my background is sales.
Sure.
And so you have to have a product that's viable. And that's so important.
Yeah.
And then sell it. Get it out there.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. You see so much of that out in the world. And I'm guessing maybe you see less. Or back in the day, that whole startup culture, there was so much of this we're raising all this money, we're doing all this stuff. And, you know, honestly, if you think back to the way Facebook was started, their whole thing was, we'll figure out how we make our money later.
Right.
And, you know, of course, now they have in horrible ways. But I never quite understood that, because I'm a guy who's always come from a business that's always been 100% bootstrapped. Mm-hmm. I've never had skill or know-how to attract investment funding. So it's been a matter of, I sell this mug or I don't eat, you know?
Right.
But that whole world is something I'm very interested in, because it's just obviously just so many opportunities. Neat to see what people can do when they embrace that. So I'm so glad to have an expert now that we can talk to about this.
Thank you. Well, in Central New York, there's a lot of companies that have had amazing funding. Yeah. Everyone thinks that it starts in Boston or the Silicon Valley, sure, or New York City. And we certainly don't have that level of funding, but there are some companies that have grown dramatically in this area, yeah, and they have received tens of millions of dollars in funding, and it's exciting to see.
Do you work on some of the, like, we'll say partnership deals? So maybe somebody's not trying to sell the whole company, but they need an investor to, you know, maybe take a portion of it or just provide capital, things of that nature. Is that something that you would do as well?
Yes, definitely. And what I would try to find is somebody who filled a need.
Sure.
You know, that maybe the current person has a weakness, and this person would bring it in. Maybe it's financial, but maybe it's other skills.
Yeah.
One of the guests that I'd like to invite on actually works to put groups of investors together, so, oh, wow, that, you know, you don't have $1 million to buy that $4 million property, but maybe you have $50,000 or $100,000. You want to be part of a joint venture.
Sure.
And that's happening more and more today.
Oh, wow.
I mean, people are hot for real estate.
Yeah. Yeah. Especially in Central New York, especially in the Syracuse market, because, of course, Micron, something,
yes,
that we haven't talked about very much. I'd love to hear your professional perspective on the coming of Micron and how those things are going. Wouldn't mind.
I'm very excited about it. You know, they're saying it's the best thing to happen to the area since the Erie Canal.
Yeah.
What I'm finding, and I would say 9 months ago, I would have to tell people who would call, investors who would call me, and I would have to tell them about Micron.
I see.
Now people are calling me and telling me about Micron.
Gotcha.
And I find that to be very exciting.
Yeah.
I've recently sold, I sold a building in, just right outside of Cicero, with two showings, an industrial building with a contracting company from Western New York who wants to come to Syracuse because of Micron. They came here to get their foothold before,
yeah,
you know, the dirt has been moved. And today I signed a lease on a large industrial building, also in Cicero, with a roofing company, who's coming to Syracuse. They already started, wow, their commercials on TV, and they're hot to get into the building.
Oh, wow.
So that's, I'm personally seeing growth from it. And I think everybody who's in the commercial real estate business and or investors in the area are pretty excited about it.
So what I've seen, and, you know, I mentioned before that this has sort of been I've been a casual observer of commercial real estate. And it seemed like years ago, you could throw a rock and find some cheap warehouse space for rent or for purchase anywhere. These days, it seems like all of those deals are gone.
Right.
Is that just going to get worse and worse?
Well, people are building.
Okay.
Some people are building on spec, which is which you would not have seen 5 years ago.
Yeah.
You wouldn't have seen that 2 years ago. There's an awful lot of land out there. We still have land.
What's that mean? Just to clarify.
Oh, sure. So it means that you build it without a tenant in mind, which is risky.
Yeah.
Of course. And you have to have some, it's hard to finance that. So you typically have to have some deep pockets. And there are a number that are being marketed right now, you know,
wow,
for people interested. Right now, I have more buyers than people who want to lease, but
yeah,
that may change. I think that people are taking older buildings that maybe got a little run down,
mm-hmm,
and they're making them look a little better and more attractive. But I think whatever inventory is out there right now is getting gobbled up pretty fast.
Yeah.
And new construction is expensive. So yeah, that will change. So it'll change the rental rates in the area too.
Wow. Wow. That's okay. Years ago, like I said, you used to see some of these things and it was so, oh man, if I just had a little bit, you could,
right,
grab this giant old factory, 100,000 square feet, and it'd be incredible. That's the price of progress, right? And the things that, rising tide lifts all boats. So
yes,
that's awesome to see. And it's great to see that somebody can be right in the middle of it. As we talk about the area and Micron and Syracuse and all these things, we should probably just a little bit talk about your kind of range, I guess you would say. Where do you go, or what areas do you work in where you might sell businesses or properties?
Businesses I can sell across the country.
Okay.
Because you don't have to be licensed the way you do as a real estate broker.
I see.
My license for real estate is in New York State. I like to say that I'm on the thruway in Route 81 corridors.
Okay.
So I'll go, I've worked Albany to Buffalo and basically the St. Lawrence River, Watertown, down to Binghamton. And all points in between.
Gotcha.
Yes.
That's a wide range. But
it is. It is. I'm a road warrior.
Yeah. Well, I can imagine because that's, I guess I'm kind of picturing there's probably, when you think of, again, home real estate, you know, millions of homes, how many commercial businesses are there? So that, you know, you kind of need to spread your range a bit, I'm imagining. Do you work with any companies that do a lot of or might have multiple locations? Do you have those types of sales where they're, you know, all five of our locations and are up for sale sort of thing?
Yes, I've worked in the automobile industry on a deal that. I've worked for my family business and where, you know, we had multiple locations and we sold and we bought multiple locations also. There's a big push for the regions to work together in upstate New York. And I think that's very exciting.
I'm
a real believer in regional economies. And, you know, we're getting tech money, we're getting infrastructure money from Albany to Buffalo. And, and I think that that's good. I think the Thruway Corridor could become the next Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
And we have water.
Yeah.
So important.
People don't realize that.
It's hugely important.
One of the main drivers of the Micron deal, right?
Yes, absolutely. Both for business and for leisure and recreation and just, you know, to live.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, we kind of, with our weather, sometimes we get a little pummeled about our weather, but, you know, we can manage it. You know, the earth doesn't shake.
You know,
we rarely get hurricanes or tornadoes. You know, it's in the teens today outside, and here we are. Sitting in here, you know, we've both been doing our business all day.
And we got heat.
You know, I've been on the road today and various places. So, you know, it's rare we can't get around.
Yeah.
You know, our DPW is amazing.
I love to see it. You know, things like this Micron deal to bring so many people from outside the area to this area. You know, I've been singing its praises for years. And it's like when you stop and think is... In a very short drive, you can be in so many major cities.
Yes.
An even shorter drive, you're in the Finger Lakes, you're in the Adirondacks, you got some of the best nature in the country that you can enjoy. Theme parks. I mean, it's, you know, of all the destinations, I guess maybe I'm a little biased, but we got it all. And folks have finally realized that. And that's an interesting dynamic to see.
It is. We were really, I think, discovered during COVID by a lot of people mm-hmm. who came from the bigger cities. And the Finger Lakes have certainly benefited from that.
Sure.
Syracuse sits right in the center of the city, or of the state, excuse me.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can be, like you said, anywhere in a very short amount of time. Mountains, rivers,
right.
Any kind of recreation that you could want. In New York City,
yeah.
You're 4.5 hours on the train if you want to take the train, which is great. You take it along the Hudson. It's absolutely beautiful. So I think that the fact that we sit right at the merger of 81, Route 81, and the Thruway is a huge advantage to Central New York.
So let's talk a little bit about continuing on that trend of sort of the expansion in Micron and things like that. And we've talked so much about the commercial real estate, but your commercial real estate also dips into the housing issue that needs to be addressed, right? Because so many places where folks live are technically commercial multi-unit properties. So how does that work, and how are you finding that those types of housing projects and things like that are coming along with all this need?
There are a lot of new apartments being built, and that's exciting to see because that has not happened in a while.
Yeah.
So, you know, there's apartments in Liverpool, on the North Side, Fayetteville. Affordable housing is being built, which we desperately need in the city of Syracuse. They're building a huge property next to the zoo, our beautiful zoo.
Yep.
And that I think that's going to be fantastic for the area. Safe, affordable housing is very important. And we need that for the workers who will come from Micron and for the other businesses that will come because of Micron.
Yeah. No, I think that's huge. And also at the same time, I wonder if you have any thoughts. There seems to be a, kind of a shortage of hotel rooms because we've seen a lot of hotels being sold off or converted into housing. And at the same time, I see as I browse the commercial listings, a number of other hotels that are sort of for sale. And I fear that they will also be turned into housing, which is great for folks that end up with a place. But what do we do about the folks that are just visiting?
I think that growth will take care of that. What was the Holiday Inn out at the thruway exit, uh-huh. It was going to be converted into housing. Now they're saying it's going to be a hotel again with hundreds of rooms. And the gentleman who bought that, his group is fabulous. I sold them a hotel a few years ago. They're real good operators, and that's exciting. And this will be their, I believe, third hotel in the Syracuse area.
Oh, wow.
So that's nice to see.
Yeah.
I'm excited about that. I think hotels really suffered during COVID. Mm-hmm. And so they're one of the last to bounce back from that, I would say. You know, people are now traveling again, but they're not traveling the way they were even at this point.
Yeah.
So they have to see the business, and new construction is expensive. But hopefully we'll also see some of maybe the older properties be upgraded, like the Holiday Inn.
I love that,
on Electronics Parkway. So I think that's a good, and it's sustainable too, which is nice. I'm optimistic.
That's great. I love to hear that. It's a little bit of an aside, but I've always thought that there was a huge opportunity with so many of these older mom and pop roadside motels mm-hmm. in little towns around the country, and just a little bit of effort put into them. I think that could be a whole thing. It's just visiting these quaint little places, and that's again one of the many random things that I think about. But
well, those were the main roads before.
Yeah.
You know, Route 20 and Route 11 before 81 and the thruway came along. That's where you find those kind of hotels.
Yeah.
And exciting news, there's a brand new hotel to be built down in downtown Syracuse called the Onondaga Hotel. And until the 60s, maybe early 70s, we had an Onondaga Hotel.
Yeah.
And I remember my parents telling me stories about it, and it was really one of the places to be. It rivaled the Hotel Syracuse at times.
Wow.
So this is going to have a rooftop. This is what I'm reading the paper.
Sure,
it's going to have a rooftop garden and a restaurant up there.
Neat.
You'll be able to see a ways, and it will really fill in, you know, one of those holes in downtown.
That's phenomenal. That's great to hear. So, Christine, tell me about this. We keep hearing this term transfer of wealth. What does that mean? Does that mean that like some rich guy is just going to put money in my bank account? Or is that not that sort of transfer?
Sorry. No. Not going to happen. Typically, it's generational.
Okay.
You know, a mom and dad to kids, mom and dad to the grandparent or to the grandchildren, that sort of thing.
Inheritance.
Yes.
Fair enough.
Yes. So it's estimated by some, by the Illinois Society of CPAs that $90 trillion will be left to baby boomers by 2044.
Wow.
It's a huge amount of money.
Yeah.
Now, what the baby boomers do with that money will be very interesting.
Sure.
I think that a lot of them watch their mom and dads work really, really hard to gain this money, and they may or may not be interested in continuing the businesses. Mm. So that's why they'll end up being sold, probably either before or after the passing of the founders.
So you see kind of a wave of businesses coming up for sale.
Most definitely, yes. And they'll sell. They'll be interesting to somebody. It may not be the kids, mm-hmm. For lack of another word. But those kids will end up with the money, from the sale. So that'll be interesting to see what they do with it and what that does to will they put in the stock market? Mm-hmm. Will they invest in passive real estate as opposed to active real estate, which is probably what their parents were doing?
Gotcha.
They will.
What's the difference?
So active would be I own this apartment complex and I go in the 1st through the 5th and I collect the rent.
Very hands-on. Okay.
Right. Where passive would be I have a management company.
I see.
Or I own enough that I have my own management company and I've gone off to another state for the winter and you just collect
they
send
the
me the bottom line.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And they leave good people in charge,
sure,
but they're not actively involved.
Yep.
That's one of the things that I'm seeing with the joint ventures too, is that people, those are passive investments.
I see.
So they don't have any responsibility for operations, and the hope and the goal is that there'll be money there.
Yeah.
It's a nice way for people to get into real estate without some of the capital that's required to do so.
Yeah. How many of these longstanding family-owned businesses also have that piece of property that will go with it?
A lot.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think given the aging of our environment and, mm-hmm. Baby boomer generations were real estate owners.
Yeah.
You had to own the house.
Right.
You had to own the building where your business is, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
I think that...
And they bought it for 3 pennies and a nickel back then, right?
Right, yes. And they bootstrapped themselves.
Right.
And they, you know, if it needed new upgrading, they did it themselves.
Right.
So they found a friend who could do it for them, you know, fairly reasonably. Depending upon the work ethic of people who might inherit some of these properties. I don't mean that in a negative way,
yeah.
But it's just, I think that, you know, there's...
It's not their thing.
Right, it's not their thing, and they maybe just want to live life, you know, and have the income coming in. So they don't want to be operational. And they don't want to have, you know, 300 employees.
Oh,
you know, they it's not what they want to do. So you only live once, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's kind of a generational thing now.
Yeah.
So I think that their parents will own the real estate, would have owned the real estate. I think the next generation might lease more.
I
just had a conversation with someone who is actually in real estate.
Out of preference,
yes,
you think?
Out of preference.
Okay.
What he said to me was, I like to, I take care of properties all day long.
Uh-huh.
I manage properties, but I get home, I don't want to deal with it. And he has a beautiful property.
Interesting.
So yeah. I think that, I think in previous generations, that was not really accepted.
Yeah.
You know, home ownership and real estate ownership was huge. And it still is huge.
Yeah.
But I think that that also leasing and renting is much more acceptable today.
Yeah. Wow, that's very interesting. What I've seen out there in the world, which is interesting, is a lot of people trying to tell this message that there are these generational businesses that mom and pop or grandpa and grandma have had for way longer than they probably could have retired a decade ago plus.
Right.
But in many cases, they don't even see it as an asset, right, that they
right.
pass on. And so many of them ready to just retire. And by retire, they mean turn the lights off.
Mm-hmm.
And so much opportunity and value, as you've mentioned there. Are there any... And again, if I'm just thinking about it, if I'm an investor and I'm watching this and I'm interested in this, are there particular types of businesses that you think are going to come to the market most often? You know, if somebody wants to say, you know, there's this wave of businesses coming up, I want to take a look. What advice would you give somebody who wants to keep an eye on that trend?
I would say definitely look at service businesses.
Okay.
Because they are typically small businesses, typically, but some of them are surprisingly big, you know, but they're quiet. You know, there's the millionaire next door kind of
sure.
a person who owns them, and they're not doing podcasts. You know,
when you say service business, we mean like plumbers and roofers and,
yes.
and those sorts of folks.
Because okay. boy, you know, our housing stock is aging.
Sure.
You know, and so it's needed.
Yep.
And we're going to have a huge growth in construction, and we're, you know, we got to find all these people to provide those services. That's why, you know, two of the last deals that I've done have been to companies coming to Syracuse to take advantage of the Micron situation.
Yeah.
And they're establishing themselves. They won't just work
right.
for Micron. They'll work for the spinoff businesses, and they'll be good citizens and taxpayers in Syracuse and
yeah.
central New York.
Now that's the part that I think is neat, not to jump back to that Micron piece real quick, but you know, everybody talks about Micron themselves and the impact. But then, like you said, there's so many of these ancillary businesses. There's companies we've never heard of that are suppliers for Micron. It'll be right on their campus,
right?
You know, and they'll make their piece, and then they'll wheel it into the Micron factory for them to do whatever they do with it. And it's just so interesting to me, I think, that that so many of these pieces are coming about and coming available. Real quickly, and then I want to ask you a little bit about what we're going to talk about in future podcasts.
Sure.
But what are your thoughts on... I guess I would say kind of the traditional Main Street retail business, you know, your bakery, your cafe, your bookstore, if that's even a thing. Where do you see those types of businesses, especially in an area that's, I would say, coming up again
right.
in Syracuse?
I think we'll see more of those because you need to feed people. You need to clothe people. Traditional malls are not as exciting to people as
sure.
they used to be. So they're looking for the more boutique-y areas. Obviously, they compete against online.
Sure.
But you can't compete against online in the restaurant business.
Yeah.
You know, you can order online, you can have it delivered, but you still have to pay money to
right.
that business. So I think there's certain businesses that, as long as the economy is strong, will always be good. But I think it's hard.
Yeah.
I think retail is hard. Hours are hard. Staffing is hard. So that it's certainly something to keep in mind. But if you can find a business that has to exist in a building,
mm-hmm.
that would be a good business to find.
I like that.
You can't move it to another state easily. You can't move it online easily.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. That's phenomenal advice.
Thank you.
So let's talk about the future, right?
Yes.
The future of this podcast anyway. What do we got in mind? Who else are we going to talk to? What are we doing here?
Well, I'd like to bring in people from all areas that touch commercial real estate. A really good real estate attorney. And I have a great person that I work with in Buffalo. She knows all of the new laws. There's a lot of new laws related to tenant relations and fair housing laws and that sort of thing. So I'd love to have her on to talk with us. I'd like to have a developer on to talk about what it's like to develop in the area, what kind of opportunities there are. We still have a lot of land. And that's along with our water. I think that's a big advantage to our area we're almost no areas are completely built up.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of land that's still available. And that is that's an exciting opportunity for people. I also would like to have some bankers on. Bankers to talk about transfer of wealth, to talk about private banking, real estate lending.
That.
Yes. And there's some really good people in the area.
Yeah.
Real estate lending. The difference between lending for real estate and lending for a business. One of the things I talk to my clients about is how do we transfer more value to your real estate to make your business more easy, to make the whole package more easy to finance. Because again, the bankers like to look at real estate that they can touch and feel.
Understandable,
Right. And definitely want to talk to some joint venture people, how they're bringing in people who have not been in real estate before. To make passive investments, and that is not something you've seen in the Syracuse market a lot. And there's a couple of people who are really pushing that now and buying some very interesting property.
Okay,
so that'll be fun. And I want to hear what people want to hear and see.
Great.
So if there's feedback from our listeners, I'd love to hear that.
I love that. That's no one has actually asked for that yet, and that's one of the best things you can ask for. I love that.
Thank you.
So Christine, before we go, I want to ask you. Off the top of your head, and there's no wrong answer, but right now, out of the deals, the opportunities that you have, what's the favorite listing that you have right now that somebody could buy, whether it's a business, a building, whatever? What's the coolest thing you got for me today?
That's a great question. I have a fabulous building on West Genesee Street in what we call Automobile Row.
Okay.
At one point, I think it was an auto dealership. It's been a couple of other things. It has about 9,000 square feet available.
Oh, wow.
And you could either be a tenant in it or you could buy it.
Mm-hmm.
It has a cell tower in the back, so there's revenue already coming in.
Ooh.
Good parking. And Route 690 is right around the corner.
Yeah.
So I like that building a lot.
Wow. That's a pretty neat opportunity. And with that cell tower, so the way that works is basically the cell phone company, whichever company it is, for our phones to work, right? They
got
to put these giant antennas, for lack of a better term, on somebody else's property. And that's, they typically, why do they not own property, I guess, is the...
I think they're not, it's not their business model.
Okay.
Right.
Fair
and
enough.
So but they're a tenant, basically.
Yeah.
They're on the rent roll. And I have a second building over on East Genesee Street across from Nottingham High School. It has a cell tower on it, top of it also. So it brings revenue in, 22,500 square feet. And it is, it was a medical a clinic, basically.
Okay.
And it could be easily converted into multiple offices, medical offices. So there's a lot of opportunities out there.
That's some cool stuff. I'm excited to be able to hear about it.
Thank you. I'm excited too. 2025, I think, is going to be a very strong year in Central New York.
I would tend to agree with you. And I'm so glad that we got the authority on all that business right here in our office. The details in the deal with Christine O'Connell Moore. I think this was great.
Thank you. Yeah. I really appreciate being here.
Yeah. We appreciate you. We'll see you next time.
Thank you.